Hello, and welcome to the History of Haiti.
I want to begin this episode with a quote from the book The Presidency of Nicolas Giffard of Haiti by John E. Bauer. It describes the opening speech he gave to the national legislature. Quote, "Before the national legislature, that April came a new president, a man for all people. He was a person of medium height, rather slender, and very strong and dignified. A mixture of black and colored elements, the new national hero had a very dark complexion, a gray hairs befitting the 53 years, and courteous airs. In fact, his decorum was striking, set off, as it was, with a quiet gentleness, polish, and evident idealism that seemed almost out of place in a Haitian warrior who had just dethroned the emperor. The ownerless imperial crown, symbolic of the recently defunct regime, was brought before the restorer of the old republic. Fittingly, the chief executive employed allegory to express his adventure into reform. After a long, flowery speech denouncing the exiled Emperor Faustin I, President Nicolas Fabre Giffard swore fidelity to the popular government, announced some preliminary political changes, and took up a small gavel. With this, he struck the crown three times, condemning the magnificent diadem and its regime as he inaugurated the republic, which must not waver. From that day on, the crown of Seleuc became a museum piece, but what it symbolized could not be so easily defeated and discarded. When Seleuc left Haiti, he left Haiti in a pretty bad position. The country was a mess. And so in this episode, the new president, Giffard, is going to attempt to clean up the mess that Seleuc left behind. Kind of like Seleuc, Giffard will have a high phase and a low phase. In this episode, Giffard is going to attempt many, many reforms and changes. But these reforms will all, mostly, end in disappointment, as we will see both in this episode and in future episodes. So obviously the main mess that Seleuc had left behind was the economy. Just as a review, the Haitian economy was mostly made up of the Lacus system. It was an agrarian, undeveloped economy. The vast majority of people lived in the countryside, in small farming villages, Lacus, or communities. These people harvested both subsistence crops, like vegetables and fruits, as well as cash crops in a system of mixed horticulture. This system, as well as just the will of the Haitian people, meant that Haiti mostly dodged the Industrial Revolution. For example, Haiti did not have any brickyards. Iron plows were rare, and the only roads were those from colonial times. So while the rest of the world transitioned from an agrarian economy to an industrial one, Haiti kept its Lacus system. To avoid the chains of industrialization, the Haitian peasants chose freedom and poverty over wealth and what they deemed re-enslavement. This dodging of the Industrial Revolution is going to come up again and again and again. But, as I talked about last episode, Seleuc's economic monopolies, high foreign tariffs, and hyperinflation had drastically hurt this economy. Giffard went about trying to kind of modernize this system. Instead of squatters, Giffard began giving official land grants to peasants who had just lived on their land forever. He also began selling public and unoccupied land. This shows just how far the Lacus system had come, as it had only been 35 years since Boyer had been trying to destroy these small peasant farmers. Giffard's goal with this, which would come to naught, was to kind of create a middle class, a rural bourgeoisie, subservient to the urban colored bourgeoisie. One of the main reasons that the Haitian economy was so underdeveloped was because of just a lack of what we would call capital. Seleuc had just printing money, of course, had created a hyperinflation crisis, making the Haitian gourde pretty worthless. To attempt to fix this, Giffard did the obvious and limited the state production of paper money. However, the Haitian issue of capital was more than just their paper money being worthless. It was that there was little investment in Haiti. And Giffard, foreigners, and much of the bourgeoisie believed that Haiti needed foreign capital and goods to truly modernize. And to get that real capital, what Haiti needed most was a resurgence in foreign trade. The foreign trade system was another thing that Salouk had totally messed up. In addition to completely undermining the foreign confidence in Haiti with his excessive political violence, Salouk had created a system of extremely high import and export tariffs that had deterred foreign traders. Giffard scrapped these in favor of much more moderate tariffs, for example, doing away with a 20% tax on coffee. To continue with coffee, Haitian coffee had previously been renowned worldwide for its quality, but recently the standard had begun to slip. So Giffard introduced new government inspections of coffee shipments to ensure the coffee was of high quality. These policies worked. In 1859, the year Giffard took office, Haiti exported 1 million more pounds than it had of coffee than it had the year before. There were other resources Giffard tried to exploit, with varying degrees of success. Around this time, Giffard chose a mining engineer to survey a region of Haiti for natural resources. He determined that there were resources, but that there wasn't enough labor to make mining successful. Giffard, more than many previous Haitian leaders, recognized that to develop and modernize the country, Haiti needed to develop its internal infrastructure. Beginning at the start of his term, Giffard began a project to create an education system in Haiti. Across Haiti, Giffard ordered new schools to be established. These included schools for girls, which mostly hadn't existed until this point. He had these schools built deep into the countryside, rather than just in major port cities. He also established new small colleges and places of higher education. In 1860, there were about 12,000 school children in Haiti. While this was a tiny, tiny percentage of the total child population, it wasn't nothing. This number would continue to grow throughout his reign. Another one of Giffard's projects was to encourage immigration from the United States to Haiti. Much like what Christophe and Boyer had done, Giffard set up an organization in the United States to recruit free African-American ex-slaves to come to Haiti. By the end of 1859, about 500 Americans had come to Haiti. In total, this program would allow about 2,000 to come to Haiti. These Americans were given land to cultivate. However, many died of disease. This program, like many of Giffard's, would slow down over the course of his term. All this economic and infrastructural development and reform attempted by Giffard would mostly dissolve. Giffard and his reform began his reform projects with zeal, but with most of them, he chose not to pursue them continuously over the course of his term. Thus, they would fail. And of those that did succeed, they would fail as soon as he left office. Around this time, up north of Haiti, the United States was about to begin the American Civil War. For those of you that don't know, the American Civil War was a war between the slave-owning South and the free North over the issue of slavery. One interesting event that helped cause it was John Brown's raid. This is of particular importance to us because John Brown was actually inspired by the story of the Haitian Revolution. He and some friends decided to attack a town in the slave-owning South with the hope of starting a massive slave revolt. This unfortunately failed, and John Brown was tried and executed by the United States government. In the days before his execution, he read a biography of Louverture to ease his mind. After his execution, John Brown was revered in Haiti as a champion of the cause of the black race. Giffard held a sort of funeral for him. They took an empty coffin and inscribed on it, quote, "Martyr for the cause of the blacks." A funeral church service was held, and the flags of the city were flown at half-mast. The city mourned the fallen hero, with many people going so far as to wear memorial badges for the next 3 days. Without John Brown, the United States continued on its path to civil war. This path was partially helped along by the story of the Haitian Revolution. To the free North, the story of the Haitian Revolution was an inspiration to the abolitionists. Many, like John Brown, viewed people like Toussaint Louverture as heroes. Meanwhile, the slave-owning South viewed the Haitian Revolution as a cautionary tale, the lesson being that if we free the slaves, they will kill us. They drew this lesson from Dessalines' genocide as well as the atrocities committed in the initial slave revolt. This made many in the South terrified of the abolition movement, which would spark the South's secession from the United States, leading to the American Civil War. One problem that Giffard had that had not really been created by Seleuc was Haiti's political system. Giffard brought back the Constitution of 1846, or rather the Constitution of 1816 with modifications. This, of course, brought back the system of government centralized around the president. Giffard had his democratic window dressing, but he made all the decisions. One effect of the instability that had come after the fall of Boyer was to create a bit of a caudillo system of political loyalty, where in the halls of government, loyalty to the individual leader in charge mattered more than any policies. When Giffard took over, he kept many of Seleuc's guys in positions of power, although he purged many of them from the government. Many of these guys held resentment against Giffard, and so soon assassination plots started up. These plots included many high-ranking members of the government. The most important of these plots was a gang of assassins who made an attempt to assassinate Giffard. Giffard was known to be at his mother's house at a certain time most days. So one night, a few of the assassins came to his mother's house. They looked through the window and saw his daughter, and assuming that he would come running down if he heard the shot, they fired at her, mortally wounding her. Thankfully, Giffard was not at his mother's house at this time. The assassins were captured, and in the end, 30 ended up being arrested, with 17 executed. The death of his daughter must have been a heavy personal blow to Giffard, coming only months after the death of his son, which I touched on last episode. In addition, his other daughter died in childbirth. Giffard lived a pretty miserable personal life, although his political energy and zeal were unmatched. According to legend, on one occasion, he discovered an officer was about to kill him, and so he took him to a cemetery and told him to do so. The officer was then supposedly broke down and was forgiven and retained his position. One final mess that Seleuc left behind for Giffard was the East. Seleuc had primed the newly formed Dominican Republic to hate Haiti. Giffard was smart enough to know that more invasions were a pointless waste. Upon taking office, Giffard cut the army in half. He also had concluded a 5-year treaty with the DR. However, this didn't stop skirmishes breaking out along the border, if it could be called that. There was no established border, actually. The biggest skirmish occurred when some Haitian soldiers were accused of trespassing, and so Santana, the president of the DR, had an army about 3,000 guys attack the Haitian army. I'll talk more about the DR next episode, but spoiler warning, Haiti is going to flip sides and end up supporting the DR in their war against a foreign country. So for the holidays, I will not have an episode at the next scheduled post, but I will be back in a month to continue the story of Gerard.